As I assume most of you know, next week or this week is Hanukkah. Right? So you have in the Svarim, we don't really do it so much in Yeshiva. Partially it's Amaratzis. Is that every Yontif has a certain message. Now, if you're a good rabbi, you can basically put any message into any Yontif. But our PMS, if you look in the Svarim, every Yontif, obviously Rosh Hashanah, Tshuva, Yom Kippur is also Tshuva. Rosh Hashanah is really Malchus, Mekabel Malchus Shemayim. Yom Kippur is Tshuva. Shavuos is Kabbalah HaTorah, right? Some of the Yom Tovim we know, and some of the Yom Tovim we don't know. In the Yeshiva Svarim, they talk about what is the Avodah of that Yontif. In other words, each Yontif is there for a reason. We believe that each Yontif is meant to help us grow spiritually. I remember in Israel, many, many years ago, I went, I think, with Rav David Chait to visit Rav Zuckerman. It was a very big gadol, and it was, I think, Sukkos. And I remember him saying that yeshiva bachrim do not know how to celebrate Yontif. Yontif is just interferes with their whole being, because Yontif is supposed to be is Hashem scattered Yontif throughout the year to help raise our level of Kedusha, to help raise our in Ruchnias. They're not a vacation days, believe it or not. Right? But he says yeshiva guys, they get their Ruchnias only from Torah. Ooh. That wasn't good. Okay, is it work? Right, the yeshiva guys get their ruchnias only from Torah. And therefore, if the yeshiva guys get their ruchnias only from Torah, he says, Yontif, if anything, seems to be always a yerida. Sukkot, Pesach, you know, to a week, 2 weeks without learning. But in reality, Sukkot and Pesach are supposed to add a certain dimension of ruchnias that you don't get all year. So you have to go ahead and figure out in every Yontif what is the special mystical connection of that Yontif. Now some of them, like you said, are Chanukah is a little bit difficult. So you read this Svarim, there are many different themes. They talk about Chanukah. They talk about fighting the Yevanim, Mesiras Nefesh, Torah Or, learning Torah. There's a lot of Sfarim talk about Mahadrim and Amahadrin, doing mitzvahs right. Those are probably all right. But I still think that the main theme that you see in the Sfarim on Chanukah, I know it's in Rav Simcha Zissel at great length, but I think it's in the main theme, is the Awanisim. That's what we say. We say Awanisim, Purim too, obviously. We make a bracha. So, and the Chanukah Menorah is a presume nisa. So it seems that the Iker Vort of Chanukah, or at least one of the Iker Vort, I don't say the, you know, maybe there's more than one theme, but in many of the Svarim, the Iker Vort of Chanukah is the presume nisa. But presume nisa doesn't just mean for the other guy, right? Rabbi Chait used to say in Israel, he was a shul rabbi at one point in time in his life, he used to say that Baobatim say the best speech is when the rabbi mamish, when the rabbi gives a real, he really tells the people off, and you can duck and the speech can hit the guy behind you right behind, between the eyes. Right? In other words, the best thing is if it gets the other guy. So pursuing Nisa, because the other guy needs pursuing Nisa. But the truth is, that a large part of the presume nisa is also for ourselves. And, you know, that we when we light the Chanukah menorah, we're doing presume nisa also for ourselves. That's part of the, obviously, our nisim, we're saying it. So what does that mean? So what it says in the Svarim, at least in many Svarim, that Chanukah is a time in Purim, is a time to work on believing in nisim. Now that sounds very strange. Because if anything, Chanukah and Purim should be the least of the Yontif for Nisim. Why? Why? Who knows why? Because the Nisim Pesach was Nes Nigla. All the other Yom Tovim were Nisim Nigloim. Chanukah, Purim, for example, a Hashem's name is not even mentioned in the Megillah. Right? Hashem's name is never mentioned in the Megillah. Hanukkah, there was a nes niglas of the menorah, but in the Ahwat Nisim, we don't even mention the menorah, right? We say we just talk about the melchama. Sarah the Gibor Miachaloshim. It doesn't mention one word about the menorah. It almost seems like that was not the ikar of Hanukkah. So what Rav Simcha Zisel says, or other people say, is that that's good with a point. Is that all the other Yantovim are Nes Niglas. Hashem doesn't do Nes Niglas daily. In fact, he doesn't do Nes Niglas today very infrequently. Not at all. So that believing that once in a blue moon Hashem will do a Nes Nigla does not really give a person bitachin. Because, you know, Hashem could do a Nes Nigla if he wants to, but he usually doesn't want to. He runs the world al pi derech hateva. What the yisayid of Chanukah and Purim is that even when Hashem runs the world al pi derech hateva, it's still nisim, right? The whole Purim story is al pi derech hateva, and yet it's amazing nisim, right? Starts out, everything seems to make sense. Achashverosh gets angry at Vashti because she doesn't come to his party. And he decides he falls in love with Esther because she's beautiful. We know she wasn't beautiful. Okay, he fell in love with her. And Mordecai overhears the plot to kill the king because he's standing there, because he's standing waiting for Esther. Right? And then at the end, everything just fitted together. But so, you know, but everything that happened is just natural course. History taking its natural course. The same thing with Hanukkah. That many as far as say that really the ikar that we're celebrating is the milchama. The menorah was really not so important in the big scheme of things. The big chashivas were that they defeated the Yavanim, they got the Beis HaMikdash back, and they got they were able to you know, the Yavanim had all kinds of laws that they couldn't serve Hashem, they couldn't do mitzvahs. In fact, the Menorah was not, because worst comes to worst, they would have had oil in 7 days, whatever, 8 days. And there's a law, which I guess a few people know, it's called Suma Hutra B'tzibur, which means that B'tzibur, they could have brought Tamei Diko oil in the Menorah. So the whole nace was not like, almost like not necessary. So what the people say is that the Iker part of the nace of the Menorah was just a simon to be Megada, to prove, to show people that the milchama was a nes. In other words, you have these people, you have them today too, right? The Chashmonoi, the Chashmonoim game, what they call, right? And then the Yehuda Maccabi is, he was this giant general, brilliant Jewish general. And, I assume there's some songs about the Maccabeim, no? About that they're, they knew how to fight and they, fighting the elephants and they started, I don't know. But that's not what happened. These were tzaddikim, whatever, b'yad chaloshim, we say. What is it? That's the, zayde, t'meyim b'yad t'horim, giborim b'yad chaloshim. And it's not that the Yehuda Makbi was a gibor. He was a cholish. And it was a miracle. So the Chanukah Menorah was that people should hear, that's what Rav Simcha Zisel says, I'm pretty sure, that the main purpose of the Menorah was only as a simon that the Melchama was a nes. And that's why in the Ahwat Nisim and the Davening, we don't even mention the Menorah. Because Menorah is only a simon to the nes. But the real nes that we really care about is winning the Melchama. He says, Rav Simcha Zisel, and then I'll get to our point, the Musar Vap is a very nice. There's a famous kasha, which I know there's about 1.5 million answers, right? Who you did that? But why we lied 8 days and not 7 days? Yeah, did you do that? You didn't end up doing that. Okay. So there's 1.5 million answers. So Rav Simcha Zisel says the answer is because it was 8 days of a miracle. Why were there 8 days of a miracle?
First one burned.
Because the fact that oil burns all together is also a miracle. It's just that we're used to it. But there's no less of a miracle. The first day was no less a miracle than the other 8 days. You have oil is this water. you put a fire and it burns. It's also miraculous. It's just Teva, basically what he basically says, that Teva is all miracles that we get used to. But everything in life is a miracle. It's just that many miracles, they happen so often that we take it for granted. Right? The miracle that oil can burn might be a much bigger miracle than some other miracles, but we just take it for granted, so we don't get misspoiled from it. Okay, anyway, so that's what I wanted to talk about. That's a long introduction to the topic. There's a concept of bitachin. The Chovetz Chavos writes in Shar Bitachin that bitachin is the most important midah of any midah a person has. Rav Shiva, I know, was very, very big on bitachin. He personally, my recollection is that Rav Shiva and Musar Seder used to learn Shar Bitachin, as far as I remember. In other words, I was in Shiva for whatever number of years. As far as I remember, for over 10 years, maybe 20 years, Rav Shiva was always learning Shar Bitachin from Musar Seder in the Chovetz Chavos. That's what I think that's the only thing I remember learning. When he came to Eretz Yisrael. So it's a long period, because I was in Yeshiva for like 15 years. And with Rashi, he used to come to Israel for 15 years. I think, that's all I remember, I'm learning Chovetz Chavos, Shar Bitachin. So he was very big in working on Bitachin. I remember Rabbi Harris saying that he thought Rashi held that's like the most important thing to work on. But the reason why we don't push it, and we don't even talk about it too much, is because it's really, really hard. And therefore, we sort of figure that we almost like work on easier things. To have bitachin is almost, I want to say almost impossible, but it's very, very difficult. Especially when we live surrounded in a world that nobody has bitachin, right? Basically, everybody in the world, everybody, is koichem v'yotzim yadi. The world runs up b'derech hateva. People running around trying to make money, investing. No, 99.9% of the population do not think, oh, Hashem's help. I'm a smart man, I'm a good investor, I know I did a good business deal, a bad business deal. That's the way the whole world runs, that's what everyone thinks. Science obviously doesn't believe in bitachin. So the whole world is anti-bitachin. So when you live in a world and that's anti-bitachin, it's very, very, very hard to have bitachin. I know the Chazon Ish quotes a famous story. I heard Rabbi Harris quote the story too, that there was a person who was always a very big Baal Bitachin. He's always saying, I have such bitachin, he's a very rich man. And he had a fleet of boats. And one day, his fleet of boats sort of got caught in a war zone for some reason, and they got all sunk. So he basically overnight went from a multi-millionaire to a pauper, probably owing money too, because he probably owed, borrowed money for the merchandise and the boats, whatever. So he says no one knew how to tell him. So the rabbi, the rav says, I'll tell him. I suppose it's a true story. So the rav went over and says, I'm such amazed by your bitachin. What would be if you would hear that all your boats would sink? What would you say? He says, it wouldn't faze me in the least. Bitachin, it's from Gamzu to Taiva, Hashem knows what's best for me. It really happened. What? It really happened. So the guy fainted. So, the fact that he said, the words, anyone can say the word, the guy really believed he was about bitachin. He believed it. But when it came to Maisa, he faints. Because it's very hard. The biggest example, I say, when we go to the candy machine, big, big Nisayim, and we put in our quarter in the candy machine, because we want our chocolate bar, and the candy machine doesn't work, which does happen sometimes, we don't say, oh, Shiata Dishmaya, or Shkocha Pratis, or Gamzu Rataiva, right? You get a kick to the machine, whatever it is. Get so angry, whatever. So if you can't have bitachin for 25 cents, do you think you're going to have bitachin when major things in life happen? So we are very, 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 very far from bitachin. So on one hand, we're so far from Yitzchak, it almost doesn't even pay to talk about it, because, you know, we're just so far, and we're on something that you have some shaykhis to. But on the other hand, it is so important that we got to talk about it a little bit. So at least Hanukkah, we should talk a little bit about Bitachin. So how does one get Bitachin? That's a very, very hard question, and the honest truth is I'm not qualified to answer it. But I'll tell you what I think it says in the Sfarim. Not that we mentioned already, one way of Bitachin is to learn the Sfarim to talk about Bitachin, right? So that's Chavetz Avavis. There's a Sefer Mitzvahs HaBitachin, which is even translated in English. That's from Rav Hominer. There are probably other Sfarim that talk about Bitachin. Yeah, there are many Sfarim that might be talking. Those are like, you know, if you want to go, I would assume those are the two extremes. If you want to go the classical, Chavetz Avavis, like 1,000 years ago. And if you want to go recent, the Mitzvahs HaBitachin is just written, you know, about 30 years ago, maybe more, 40 years ago. Okay. Anyway, but most of the Sfarim say another way of getting Bitachin is by observation, thinking, noticing the miracles. We say in the Shemona Esrei, Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu. No, I said it wrong. Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu, right, we did, right, that we, the Nisim that happen every day. Al Niflosecha V'tovasecha Shebechol Eis. So that means that we say that Hashem does niflos, which are also, it's also pretty amazing, every second, and nisim, which are better than niflos, every day. So supposedly, if we would be paying attention, we would notice nisim every day. Now, if you see a nis every day, you should not be talking, right? If you would see, we would think, that was not obviously not true, because there are people that saw miracles, and then, but if you wanted to, and you saw nisim, you should not be talking. So what many of the Sfarim say is that you have to notice the nisim. So I wrote down on a piece of paper, I scribbled down, this is not in order, all the different nisim that we're supposed to notice. Okay, I think I have around 10. Okay, but they're not in order. I was just, because I wasn't in being in order. And it could be I wrote some more than once, because I just was scribbling. Okay, the first one's obviously the Nisim in the Torah. You're supposed to think about, right? If you believe the Torah, so you believe that these Nisim happened. They say that Rav Chatzko spent tremendous time and energy on Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that was his, I mean, basically all year long, he worked on Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim were all with the miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kabbalah Satara, you know, that chain. And those were, Rav Chatzko held that the main thing that was to work on Emuna. Because that's a Gemara in Marcus, that after the Taryag Mitzvahs, but they limited to one Tzadik Be'emunasa Yichya. So he went ahead and spent, and they say that he spent his whole, that's what I heard from his Talmidim, that Rav Chatzko basically spent his whole years, all his shmuzim were on, you see his Mitzrayim, it came out, I'll say only, but, you know, that was the feeling that he was working on increasing his amuna. And you think about the Nisim in the Torah. If you believe the Torah, which we do hopefully believe, so, okay, the Torah says it's happened. So we have a reliable testimony that this happened. So that should give you a certain amount of emunah.
Why does it give you bitachon?
Well, if you believe, they go together. Emunah and bitachon are basically the same. Emunah means intellectual belief, and bitachon means the emotional relaxation that comes from that intellectual belief. So emunah believes that Hashem is running the show. Intellectually, I realize, and bitachon is, since Hashem runs the show, and I know Hashem loves me, Hashem knows what's best for me, so I don't have to be, if something happened, it's not bad luck, and it's not, if I lost my quarter in the candy machine, it wasn't, if I'm a Baal Emunah, I didn't lose the quarter in the candy machine because I had bad mazel, I lost the quarter in the candy machine because Hashem knew that it's good for me to lose the quarter. Either because Hashem runs the world.
No, but but that was 2,000 years ago.
Well, 2,000 years ago, so it's a simon that Hashem has that ability. And just like he has that ability then, he has the ability now. Nothing happened. Hashem didn't lose his power. He just went ahead and became more Nister. But if he has the power to do it in Nigla, he has the power to do it in Nister. So when I lose my quarter, I'm saying, well, listen, Hashem runs the world. He can make me lose a quarter. He can make me get my candy if he wants. So obviously Hashem has a cheshbon. Why it's good for me either not to have a candy or to lose a quarter, or to get a punishment, or whatever it is. Well, yeah.
What about B'tochen that something will turn out a certain way?
I don't know. Let's leave that till the end. We're talking about the simple B'tochen is that B'tochen that Hashem is running the world. The Chazon Ish, you're asking a very good question, but that's a complicated shmuz. The simple B'tochen which the Chazon Ish talks about is the belief that Hashem runs the world. Things don't happen because of accidents. They're not bad luck or good luck. Things happen because Hashem wanted it to happen. And since Hashem is called Yochel, and he's the smartest, he knows what's good, and he cares about us, so Kam Zuda Taiva, whatever happened is for the best. Whether it could be the best thing, I should get a punishment. Okay, it's also for the best. So there's a certain relaxation. You're not nervous. Now, go tell that to me when I'm driving and I see police car lights back of me, you know, and plenty nervous. And the worst comes to worst, all he's going to do is give me a ticket for $100. But, you know, so I'm saying I don't claim to be the big Baal B'tochen, but a person who has B'tochen, if he's driving his car and all of a sudden he sees a police light behind him, okay. You know, comes to the Hashem, obviously knows. It's good for me to get a ticket, you know, whatever reason, whatever the cheshbon is. Right? Okay, anyway. The next one that I have here, Niflois Abriya. Right? For example, a typical example they give. A child comes from what they say, a tipa srucha. Right? For that little tipa srucha, right? Comes out a whole child. And that child has the ability to make another child. Right? That child has a brain. The child has a, you know, it's pretty amazing. Out of that little tipas rucha, right? A microscopic thing, produce a perfect human. That's pretty amazing. He says, the Svarim will say that if we weren't so used to it, that would be a bigger miracle than the miracle of oil burning for 8 days. Right? It'd be a bigger miracle than Kriyas Yamsuf. It's, you know, that's like an amazing thing. You take this little teeny tipas rucha from a person, or you take a seed from an apple and you plant it in the ground, and next thing you know, you get a tree with has hundreds of apples. It's amazing. So the world is full of Niflais Habriya, which is just amazing things. It's just the way the world works, that there are just, it shows tremendous gevura, tremendous chachma, tremendous kayach, which all should give a person a certain amount of emuna. Okay. In the same vein, they say that everything is very similar, but everything in the world is exactly the right amount. For example, they say that if the earth would be any closer to the sun, we would burn. If the earth would be farther from the sun, we would be freeze. It's basically, you know, exactly the right distance. If the size of the earth is a thing called gravity, which they say comes from the size of the earth. If the world was a little bigger and the gravity was stronger, we couldn't walk. If the world was a drop smaller, then you also couldn't walk. Then you'd be jumping, and you'd take a step and you'd fly and hit the ceiling. So there's a perfect balance. Everything works out perfect. The exact amount. Even they say the Chayes of Avos said this, that the way the most people need air, so wherever you go, there's always air. You know, the next thing people need the most is water. Most places you go, there's water. than food, you know, not as much. Right? You know, there's, you know, and it gets, the more something Hashem puts in the world, it usually works out. The more some things that are needed are there in the quantity that they're needed. Right? Things just work out. There's this whole, in science, I don't remember my science, you know, all these chains of nature, right, that it rains and it evaporates and the human breathes. Breathe out, whether we breathe out, what's it called? Carbon dioxide, and then the plants breathe out the carbon dioxide, and they breathe in the carbon dioxide, and they breathe out the oxygen, and you know, everything just works out. The whole world just happens to all blend together, and the flowers make the, you know, make this, and then the bees come there because they need to get this for their honey, and meanwhile, when they're flying from one flower to the other, they pollinate the flowers. You know, the world just coincidental how everything works out so perfectly, right? It's just, you know, when it's not shaykh. Okay, we're just going through things that different people say. Animals are pretty dumb, right? Usually you try and have a conversation with an animal, but the animals are amazingly smart in certain things that they have to know. Even a baby, like a human baby, knows how to nurse. How to, you know, whatever the animal needs, they know. Animals, there are all kinds of things that they say that animals know. How do animals know what foods to eat and what foods not to eat? How do animals know what animals to stay away from and what animals not to stay away from, right? Okay, you know, how do they know when there's in danger and when they're not in danger? There's all kinds of wild story. You know, birds make nests. How do they know how to make a nest? They talk about, I know Rav Avram, he's always talking about a bird, I don't know which bird it is, that when he lays his eggs in an antica, and you know, it's too cold. So the female lays its eggs on the feet of the male, and the male stands there for like 30 days. What, penguin? Just doesn't move, so that the, like, how do they know that if they would let the egg touch the ice, the egg would die, and therefore the father stands for Mesiras Nefesh 30 days without moving, you know, and not eating, just so that the egg won't touch the ground, so that he can live. Like, where do the birds know that? They bring, I don't know that there's, the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh talks about, I mean, my favorite story about the birds in America, and in the birds in the snakes in America that want to eat a certain type of bird, so they know how to scare them psychologically, you know, and then the birds panic and they fall down, or they freeze. Like, they taught that psychological lesson. It says that birds that eat, well, those are snakes that eat birds. But there are birds that eat snakes, that the snakes are poisonous, so that they said they eat something before they eat the snake, which is a, what's it called?
Antidote.
A what?
Antidote.
Right, but it's another better word for it.
Antidote.
What? It's something, like it's an, a what?
Vaccine.
Not a vaccine, but it undoes the poison. So they say before the snake bird eats the snake, it will always eat a certain plant, which the bird somehow knows that plant kills the poison of the snake. Like who taught? Or if a spider makes a spider web, you know. All these amazing chachmas. So, these dumb animals are pretty smart. Even vegetables are smart, right? Trees, they say that the tree will always somehow send its root to the water, which is also a plea, but okay. Okay. Then the things in Jewish history, the kosel. The koso is a miracle, right? The fact that the koso is still there. Chazal said in the Medrash, written 2,000 years ago, that the koso will always be there. And it's still there, you know? A wall, a single wall that stayed from the Beis HaMikdash, didn't get knocked down. They wrote down that the koso will remain. You would think that Yerushalayim, right? If you go to Yerushalayim in the koso and you look down, right, you know that you see that thing, you look down that what's it called? You know there's a glass, a hole, and you can look down by the kotel. It's like it's all the way down. The reason why it's all the way down is because Yerushalayim was built and burned and built and burned and built and burned probably more than any city in the world, by about 50 million times, because every time there was a crusade, the Crusades captured it from the Arabs, and they burnt down everything the Arabs had. And then the Arabs captured it from the Christians, and they burnt everything for the Christians, and back and forth. And the Romans, you know, it kept on happening all over history. So the city is built on, you know, destroyed houses. That's why the whole level, there's no Harabais anymore. Where's the Harabais? It's the cult goes up to almost to the Sahara, the height of the Harabais. So if the city was burned to pieces like 100 times and every house got destroyed, how's the Kotel still there? You know, it's an amazing thing. In the same vein, they say Ravoba said that the fact that just time that the Jews have Israel is, if you know Jewish history, world history makes no sense, because for 2,000 years basically, the Arab world and the Christian world were fighting over who gets to control Yerushalayim or Eretz Israel. That is like the most valued real estate in the whole world. And who controls it? The dinky people called the Jews, who in the 1940s, they were the most hated, you know, poorest. The whole world out to kill them. They have no army, no money. You know, they're basically being trampled on by the whole world. Killed, murdered, and then 4 years later, you know, where did they come from? They walk off with the most valuable real estate in the world. Ravelva used to say, I didn't hear from him, but I heard from someone else, used to quote him, that if we understood Christian theology, we would realize that having a state of Israel completely slugs up all Christian theology. Everything the church believes in is all slugged up, because if you would read their theology, that the Jews is the, you know, the cursed people and this and that. It just doesn't make, okay. It's time that Israel survives against all the Arabs, you know. It's also the daily miracle. There's like a million Arabs to every one Jew, you know. Okay. Jewish history. I assume most of you heard this, right? The Yavid says this. It's not just the Yavid, but he says it and very clearly, that in his opinion, there's a bigger nes that every single person can see, greater than all the nesim of Kriyas Yamsuf and Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what's that nes? He says the fact that for 2,000 years, the Jews were in Galus, and every nation of the world wanted to kill the Jews, because the Goyim hate the Jews. That's the taiva of the world, for whatever reason. But the Goyim hate the Jews, the Jewish, whatever it is, because we claim we're the chosen people. Maybe they know we're the chosen people, whatever it is. So they hate us, because that's human nature. You hate people that are better than you. And yet, he says, every culture has been destroyed. The Roman culture doesn't exist. Greek culture doesn't exist. You know, he goes through all the different cultures, most of them I never heard of. And they all got wiped off the face of the earth. And the Jews, not only that we exist physically, but we exist with our Torah. Basically, we keep the same, right? We learn the Gemara. Gemara is written 2,000 years ago. I don't think there's anybody that's reading Torah, keeping mitzvahs, you know, from 2,000 years ago. You know, the Christians keep Christmas, but this Christmas has nothing to do with Christmas of 2,000 years ago, believe me, right? They did not have the lights, you know. Anyway. Okay. I heard Rav Plashinsky used to say that the person has a conscience. He says that's the biggest nace to the Tzom Elokim. He says you believe the human body, somehow the body came. But where does the Hargoshes came? How does it work that when an Ani knocks on your door and you're a stingy guy and you don't want to give him staka, but he asks you and you give him the $50. You say, here's your lousy $50. I never want to see you again. Like, why are you giving it to him? Because something in me feels guilty not to give him. Why? If you're a behemoth, if you're a machine, you don't want to give him. Don't give him. But my neshama makes me feel guilty. Right? He says, why is that? If it's not a Tzom Elokim, why do you have an urge, a need that you can't help yourself? As much as you could be the biggest bum, and you can't help yourself, that you have to be nice to the person. Right? There's stories of even the Nazis at times that they were nice to people, you know, because they just couldn't help themselves. It's a certain Tzal Melokim. He says it comes out. Where do these where do feelings come from? You can evolve. I don't know if you can evolve either physical. You know. They obviously the Chayes of Ovid says, but the whole idea. You know, I didn't know. People think evolution was thought of, discovered by Darwin. But the Chayes of Ovid quotes people that believed in evolution. Chayes of Ovid written over 1,000 years ago. And he says how stupid it is. He says, take any book, and if you believe the Gemara, which is much less complicated than the world, someone spilt a bottle of ink, and the Rashi, Tosfos, and all the Meforshim, the Gilyon HaShas, and everything worked out perfectly on the 100 pages with the Marsha in the back, and the Ramshif, and the Madura Basra, and that just because the guy spilt the ink, and he says that's less likely than the world coming out the way it is.
And that goes for Tsunim?
What?
And that goes for Tsunim?
Yeah, with their mistakes. Anyway, but the Maisa, so you would think that, okay, but, right, but, okay, I lost where I was going. So Rapleshinsky said about the conscious. He also, Rapleshinsky used to say that the Shoah was the greatest proof to the existence of Hashem. Because the greatest proof to the existence of Hashem is when the world doesn't run for Klal Yisrael according to the laws of nature. So that right according to nature could be for good or for bad, because that still shows that that there's not a nature, there's not a teva. So he used to say, I heard him so many times. Now I'm not that he used to say that Germany lost World War II because they were too busy killing the Jews. He says it makes no sense. Why would the Germans care that there's some Jew living in some little dinky village in the middle of the woods in Russia? He used to always say, my parents didn't speak a word of Russian, of German. They lived in the middle of Russia. There were no roads to where they were living. They weren't bothering anyone. That the Germans, they lost World War II because they had to go find my parents and kill them. So that's a nace. Now, it's not a nace that he appreciated, but it's a nace. That it was a show that Hashem wanted this to happen. It makes it happen. It should lo be derech hateva. And things are should all be done. He says that's a nice, which should cause. Okay. Now I left the main thing. The main thing, and then we got to get on because it's getting late. Is I heard this from Rav Shadron. He said his main thing. Rav Shadron was going ahead and saying a shmooze, and he opened up a Gemara after what he wanted to say to shmooze, and it opened up to the right place. So Rav Shadron stopped the shmooze and he says, a miracle just happened. Hashgacha Pratis. I opened up. He didn't say a miracle. He didn't say, but you know, Hashgacha Pratis. I opened up to the right place. It's the third time today that I opened up a sefer and it opened up to the right place. He says, when things like this happen, you're mechuyev to notice it, because that's what gives you bitachon. When we just say little things gonna act, oh, you know, look at my you don't need to pay attention. If you don't pay attention, you know what I mean? Person has to notice the little things in life that are clear, that are, when you pay attention, you can see Hashgacha Pratis. There's, the Rav Chesko Cern has said that a person should have a book where he writes down all the Hashgacha Pratis that he sees in himself or others. I once tried this a few years ago in a Musarvan, that we should have a book in the back in the yeshiva where guys should write down their Hashgacha Pratis stories. Never again, because the guys wrote all these, you know, make-believe stories about, you know, they were very make fun of me. They made fun of me, of course. So we're not doing that again. But in theory, that what? Rav Chasko Sarna says that you must have a book. I'll show you inside if you want. But you must have a sefer where when something happens, because you don't remember. You know, but these little things happen, I don't say daily, once a week. You know, I'm driving a car, and I should have gotten into an accident, but instead, you know, I was backing up, and I was going to back into a car, and then for some reason I hit the curb, you know, whatever, and the car didn't work. And then I turned around, and lo and behold, there was another car there. And I don't know, these things, you know, all these kind of Hashgacha Pratis stories, which after they happen to you, you just, you know, forget it. So So he said, you're supposed to keep a record of your Hashgacha Pratis. And that reminds you, you see, because the biggest thing for Emunah is when you see how Hashem helps yourself. You know, if you see in your own life, Hashgacha Pratis, you know, that's what really gives you real Emunah. So you see the little things in life, that they're mamish, you know. I know one of the brothers said that sometimes you can see in other people also, you can see Hashgacha Pratis. He said there was a case in Europe. Rabbi Yerucham made a big thing about, I know it was Rabbi Yerucham, I don't remember who it was. I don't remember. It wasn't Rabbi Yerucham. Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe it was Rabbi Yerucham. In that there was during World War I, there was a yeshiva, the Mir yeshiva probably had a run away. Because they were, you know, the yeshivas always ran away during war. And they came to some city, and they had nowhere to go, so they moved into a shul. And, you know, where else are they going to go? And they weren't learning in there, maybe sleeping in there. And the gabbai said, you can't messing up my shul. You know, and he basically kicked the yeshiva guys out of the shul. Because they're making the shul dirty. Where are they supposed to go? They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to learn. No, making the shul dirty, they can't be in the shul. So he said, maybe it was 20 years later, but whatever it was, this gabbai died in shul on Yom Nerav, on Yom Tov, I don't know, Yom Nerav, probably. And the din is that a mace is muksa, but it can't be in shul because then the kohenim can't come to shul. And it was like on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the kohen had to come, and they had a dukkan. So basically they had to kick his body out of shul. So he was like, he said, it was like so clear the Hashgacha Pratis. He kicked the yeshiva guys out of shul, so he got kicked. His body, that's how you, you know, move his body when, you know, clock or yad. They basically kicked his body out of the shul. So Rilke said, yeah, there, you see Hashgacha Pratis, you know. So sometimes you can see it, but very often you don't see it. But when you do see it, so he says, you have to have a book of writing down little things that you see. If you hear a story of someone else, you know, there was a lady, I remember, my wife used to go to a class in Israel, and they used to start the class every day. There was people would submit story, and then she would start the class with like five Hashgacha Pratis right from the audience. And then, you know, so there are, if you pay attention, there are Hashgacha Pratis. And that's a very, very big chizik. Okay, I ran out of time. I would just say there's another few ways to get bitachon. First of all, through davening. Because when you daven, you're basically asking Hashem. So that knocks into your head that you're in Hashem, controlling Hashem. We believe that you're supposed to daven for everything. Even if you're playing a basketball game, if you want to win, you daven, you should win. You don't have to daven that Shemona Ezra. You can daven that a minute before the basketball game. Because basically, if Hashem is in control of everything, so everything you do that you want it to work, you should daven for. Now, you should obviously daven more for more things that are more important. But it's not like that if you daven for one thing, you use up your schusim. And oh, no, you know, Hashem is limited. Oh, I'm only going to give you one thing. That's not the way it works. The more you daven, the more you know, so you can daven as much as you want. So we be supposed to daven for everything. Also, it's a very good thing for bitachon. If you hang around people who have bitachon, which I don't know who to suggest. Rabbi Cohen is a very big Baal Bitachon. I assume there must be some people. Rabbi Harris probably a big Baal Bitachon. You know, she was obviously a big Baal Bitachon. If you hang around people who have a lot of Bitachon, it rubs off a little bit. Because it's like anything else. When you see it in action, it has a tremendous hashpah. Okay. What? Same
Bitachon.
Yeah, it's also good. Yes. There's a certain sukkim of saying bitachon. They say that's supposed to be a good thing.
Just saying the psukim?
Yeah, especially
because it's like
it says in one of the sparim that when you go in a car and you start driving, there's no way you drive, it's not logeia. So one of the sparim it says you're supposed to say the pasuk ki hu yatzilcho mipach yokush midever chavos, because it's like bitachon. And Elokai Eftapo, I'm sorry. Omer Hashem Max, we also had Elokai Eftapo. Kuyatzil, I start from the middle of the pasuk. So in other words, it's just a statement also. Like I'm driving, oh, there's a realization, there's a drop of sakana. I have bitachon. So you're at least by stating that you have bitah, you realize that Hashem's in control in different situations. That's also a chizik for bitah. I think it's a skula for a success, whatever. Okay.